Good afternoon and welcome to On the Docket. I'm Patricia Salkin, Dean of Toro Law Center in Central Islip. And every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today on the docket, we're talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day, which is on April 16th. Decisions Day exists to highlight the importance of advanced care planning in the event that you or someone in your family becomes incapacitated and is unable to communicate their own wishes. One of the best ways to express those wishes is by designating a healthcare proxy or creating a living will. According to a Pew Research Center study, 95% of Americans have heard of a living will, and 71% of Americans have even thought about their end-of-life preferences, but only 29% actually have a living will. And yet, even with a living will, the legal issues involved with making medical decisions for someone who can no longer make their own decisions are complicated. So to shed some light on these issues, today we have Toro Law Professor Marian Artusio and Richard Weinblatt, a lawyer with the firm of Haley Weinblatt and Calcani. Welcome to the show. First, we'll start with Marian. Marian is the founding director of the Aging and Longevity Law Institute at Toro Law. Prior to this appointment, she served as director of clinical programs, overseeing both the in-house clinical and externship programs. She also supervises the Elder Law Clinic and teaches courses in elder law and consumer law. Thank you for joining us, Marian.
To be here today, Dean Salkin.
Marian, can you tell us the difference between healthcare proxies and a living will in New York State?
Well, a living will is a document that a person will write expressing their wishes for medical treatment at a point in time when they may not be able to make their own medical decisions. A living will generally is written to express an individual's wishes regarding treatment when they're close to the end of their life. And it's frequently used, although doesn't have to be, but it's frequently used to express a person's desire to forego certain treatment when their individual is terminally ill or when death is near. But a living will can express a variety of opinions. It's basically a document to write out, or in which a person writes out, all of their concerns about treatment that might be offered to them when they're not able to make their own decision at that point and express their own wishes. Now, a healthcare proxy is different. A healthcare proxy is a document that we use in the law to appoint someone else to make decisions. So, for example, if I were to write a healthcare proxy, I would be appointing another person to make medical decisions for me if at any point in time I would be unable to make my own decision. I would be appointing someone to speak to my doctors, to receive information from my doctors about my condition, my prognosis, what the available alternative treatments are, and for that other person to make a decision if I'm not in a medical condition to give informed consent about treatment.
So is it common for people to have both a written living will and a healthcare proxy, or do they have one or the other?
It's possible to have both. Many people have both, but it's not necessary. They fulfill somewhat different functions. It's also possible within a healthcare proxy form to state what your wishes are. So when you appoint someone else to be an healthcare agent for you in New York, you can also include some specific information about treatment that you particularly want or treatment you do not want, or values or desires that you would like your healthcare agent to consider in making a medical decision for you. But many people do have both, but it certainly is not a requirement to have both. They can complement each other.
So what happens when we wind up in a situation where a person doesn't have a written healthcare proxy and they don't have a living will, but they're also unable to make medical decisions for themselves?
Well, in New York, the problem was problematic, certainly, until a few years ago. And in 2010, New York legislature passed something called the Family Healthcare Decisions Act. And that statute allows a family member, the appointment of someone, to make medical decisions where there is no healthcare agent appointed through a healthcare proxy. So, if a person has not appointed someone as a healthcare agent, the law allows someone else, a family member primarily, to step into the place of the patient if the patient is incapacitated and unable to make their own medical choices. And a family member can make that choice for the patient. And there's a priority list, essentially, a priority list that says if the person has not appointed a healthcare agent, then if they have a guardian, then the guardian can make a decision. And if not, then a spouse, an adult child, or a brother and sister can make a decision, including, I think the last category is someone who's considered a close friend, if they have none of these other relatives who have a higher priority. So in our law, we allow family members under certain situations to make decisions even if a person has not appointed someone as a healthcare agent.
So, you know, many people think about living wills and healthcare proxies, thinking about older age or as we age, but that's not necessarily the case. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective, who should plan for diminished mental capacity and at what point in our lives and where do we go to get help?
Well, everyone should plan for this. After all, you know, the phrase is, tomorrow is never promised. We never know when we might be in a situation where we need medical care, and because of illness or accident or whatever the condition is, we'd be unable to make our own medical choice. You know, I could walk out of my office and be hit by a car or struck by lightning or have some other terrible accident and quite suddenly be unable to make a medical decision, and I might not be able to make a medical decision for a short time or for an extended period of time. So really, appointing someone as an agent to make healthcare decisions for you is something that everyone should think about, not just people as they age. In fact, you might be interested to know that the major legal cases involving medical decision-making for others are ones that involved younger people. Terry Schiavo, Nancy Cruzon, the major court cases are ones that involved younger people and the difficulty that family members had under the law existing at the time, the difficulty those family members had in making medical decisions. So it's important that everyone do it. We just don't know what will happen in the future, and we certainly don't want to be in a situation where our family members really don't know what to do and don't have the information to make decisions as we would want them to make. So where can people get help? Well, of course, the New York State Department of Health website has some information and forms for the New York healthcare proxy, and that's a good place for people to start. There are many other organizations that have information that is available through their websites. And, of course, you might want to consult an attorney. The local bar association can make a referral to lawyers who can help individuals fill out these forms and think about what they want to put in a living will, but they do not have to be done by attorneys. Lawyers can assist people in thinking about what these decisions are and how to craft the right kind of language, but it doesn't have to be a lawyer who does it.
Right, so I think the good news is that in general, the state and the New York State Bar Association have really vetted model forms that are available. It's just a matter of if people want to tweak them for individual needs.
Well, it's important, I think, to think about that because, after all, a form is a form, but your own wishes and desires as to what kind of medical care you want, what kind of treatment you find acceptable, what kind of quality of life you find acceptable, they're very intimate and personal decisions, and they can't be answered easily by checking off a blank on a form all the time. Sometimes an individual really needs to take some time to craft and write out the matters that are important in terms of their values and desires, because while forms are useful and helpful, it may not express exactly what an individual wants for themselves.
Well, of course, and it's a difficult conversation sometimes to have with your family members as to what precisely your wishes might be.
It's a difficult conversation. People don't often like to think about the difficult things that can happen, but it's an important one. It's an important one to have for a number of reasons. First of all, obviously, if you're going to appoint someone as a healthcare proxy and you want that person to have the responsibility of making decisions if you're not able to make them yourself. It's important that that individual know what your wishes are, to know what your desires are, what matters to you, what values you have, what you think about, whole range of issues that can be affected by medical decisions, what level of disability or discomfort you find acceptable, what risks you're willing to take. All of those things are things that a person should have a detailed and heart-to-heart conversation about a person they might want to appoint as a healthcare proxy. The other reason why it's important is that, sometimes when difficult decisions need to be made, it's important that family members feel assured that they know what your wishes are, that they understand them, that they are not, it gives family members kind of the courage sometimes to make a decision in a difficult situation if they have a pretty clear understanding of what you would want for yourself if you could make that decision right then.
All good advice. Thinking about National Healthcare Day, Healthcare Decisions Day coming up. I want to thank you, Marianne Artusio, for being with us. And please stay with us because coming up, we'll talk to Richard Weinblatt. Welcome back to On the Docket. I'm here with Marianne Artusio, professor at Touro Law Center, and we've been talking about advanced healthcare planning. We're thrilled to also have Richard Weinblatt of Haley Weinblatt and Calcagni, and also an adjunct professor at Touro Law Center joining us today. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Patty.
So thanks, Richard. Your practice concentrates in the areas of elder law, including Medicaid planning, guardianship proceedings, estate planning, and estate administration. And I also understand that you're chair-elect of the New York State Bar Association's Elder Law and Special Needs section. So we really need some input from you this afternoon. We just heard Marianne speak to some of the healthcare considerations, but there are also financial considerations for advanced care planning. And so my first question is, if you were to hand someone an advanced care financial checklist, what would be on it?
Okay, well, at a minimum, it would include a durable power of attorney, a last will and testament, and a review of beneficiary designation forms that the person has for their life insurance policies and their retirement plans. That would be the bare minimum I would look for in a checklist.
And let's talk about the durable power of attorney first. What is it, and how does this differ from the healthcare proxy we were just talking about?
Very different. Durable power of attorney is a document that allows a person to appoint an agent to make his or her financial decisions. And this allows an agent to pay bills and to manage finances. The nature of why they call it durable is because this power of attorney remains in place even if that person should become incapacitated. So that agent still has the authority to handle all of the finances and bill paying for the person who appointed them. And it's very different than a healthcare proxy in that it does not permit someone to make medical decisions, whereas a healthcare agent appointed under a healthcare proxy can only make medical decisions and has no authority to make financial decisions. So you really need both documents.
All right. So Marianne mentioned that the health department has put a form for healthcare proxies online, and I understand the state bar negotiated with the state a short-form power of attorney. Can you talk about that short form and sort of the benefits of using the form versus going to see an attorney and how complicated financial matters might get?
Well, the short form power of attorney form is standard. It is set forth in the statute, and that's why they call it a short form power of attorney, because the powers that are granted are all given letters, and to see exactly what that power is, you can go to the statute and see the extent of the agent's authority. But the advantage of going online and just picking up the form, at least you have something in place. I, of course, as an elder law attorney, would always recommend that you see an attorney to do this document, because the powers that are granted can be very limited and they can be very broad. And what I mean by that is, for example, a power of attorney form, an agent may only make gifts of up to $500 in a year. That's total gifts of the person's property. If you want to make additional gifts, you would have to add a statutory gifts rider to that form. And these can be very valuable, but also very dangerous powers to have, because they would allow an agent, perhaps, to deplete the person's assets, even if the person was at that point unaware. So I would always recommend seeing an attorney to review the forms and make sure you're granting only the powers that are really necessary for your particular purpose.
Right, because of course some of the powers of attorney forms or some of the ways that you might use it could allow somebody to represent you or make certain decisions for you while you still have capacity. You may just be out of town or otherwise unavailable, whereas the powers that you're giving away in the durable power of attorney last when you can no longer prevent it.
That's correct, and that's an important distinction. When you grant the power of attorney under the durable power of attorney form, that agent has immediate power to act on your behalf. If you would like to limit that power so that it only takes effect upon you becoming incapacitated, you can modify the power of attorney form to provide for that.
And so, you know, the theme of our show, of course, is about the upcoming National Healthcare Decisions Day. What kind of problems do you see in the firm with families who have not prepared in advance?
Okay, what we're seeing is a tremendous amount of conflicts within families. We're seeing when a parent, for example, has not made any advance directives with regard to their health care, like appointing a health care agent, that oftentimes the children are then fighting over what mom or dad would have wanted in the particular situation. There's also a disagreement that can result in court battles over end-of-life decisions when each family member believes that he or she knows what mom or dad would have wanted in those circumstances. We're unfortunately also seeing a lot of financial difficulties where we have agents appointed who have acted improperly, and also where a person now lacks the capacity and there's no access to that person's funds to pay for the person's bills or to manage their finances. And when the advance directives aren't put into place, it leads to the necessity to have a guardian appointed. Guardianship proceedings are time-consuming and expensive and result in a lot of family conflict.
Right. So, you know, you really can help your family out if you are able to think about these things well in advance of when the situations might arise.
That's absolutely correct.
So why is it important that the lawyers have been so active on issues of advanced care planning? Do you think that's making a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. Today, people are living longer. We are an aging population, and due to the baby boomers, the number of senior citizens will continue to increase. And unfortunately, as people age, they may lose the ability to make their own medical and financial decisions. And for all the reasons that we've just discussed, the public needs information about the current laws, the advance directive options that are available, and what may happen if advance directives are not put in place.
Right. So you mentioned also that two of the other three important documents that you work with your clients on, the second one was the last will and testament. You know, how complex does this document wind up being? Is it simple? Is it difficult?
And that the answer to that varies with the person's financial asset. It can be a very simple document, especially in a family that has, let's say, a spouse and children. The document can be as simple as designating that the assets go to the spouse, and if the spouse isn't surviving, then to the children. And it can specify how it goes to the children, if a child predeceases, if it goes to their children, should they have any, so grandchildren, or it can leave it to the surviving children. So it could be a very simple document. And then as a person's assets become a lot more extensive, it can become a very complex document where you can plan for trusts for children and grandchildren, ages, specific ages at which the children and grandchildren have received their funds to protect them from their own improvidence. So the answer is it could be very simple. It could be very complex. It really depends upon the person's financial situation.
And you also mentioned that there's a third form or document
that
you use?
The third form I was speaking about is to review beneficiary designation forms for life insurance and retirement plans. And what happens is people always assume that once they do a will, that their assets are passing pursuant to the terms of the will. And I find that most people don't understand that the will only disposes of assets that aren't already being disposed of in another manner. For example, if there's a beneficiary designated on a retirement plan, no matter what the will says, the retirement plan is going to the designated beneficiary. That same holds true for life insurance, and also holds true for joint bank accounts and trust for accounts. So it's very important, if you want to have a coordinated estate plan, that your designations that you make on all of your other accounts and life insurance policies are coordinated with your last will and testament.
Right, and so, of course, that's going with your wishes on who you might wish to leave certain assets to, but aren't there also tax implications?
There are tremendous tax implications. For example, if you have no designated beneficiary on an IRA account, your estate will have to take those, your estate will have to receive those proceeds, and the time period over which the IRAs have to be counted as income is accelerated. Whereas if you have designated beneficiaries, for example, if it's a spouse, the spouse can then elect to roll that IRA over to his or her own IRA and designate new beneficiaries. And the minimum distributions that they have to take will be based upon their own life expectancy. And when they pass, their children can then elect to take those distributions over their own life expectancies. So the designation of the beneficiary allows IRAs and other retirement plans to be paid out over a much longer period of time. And the further out you can defer the taxation of the monies that you have to take out of these retirement plans, the more wealth that can be generated.
Lots of complex issues. I want to thank you. We're running out of time today. I want to thank you, Richard and Mary Ann, for joining us to discuss lots of legal issues surrounding National Healthcare Decisions Day. This is Patricia Salkin, Dean of Toro Law Center. Don't forget, On the Docket airs every Sunday at 4:30 on Long Island News 103.9.